Mr. Orlando. LGBT advocates speak out once again on Jacksonville's human rights ordinance. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and watch the show every day, video on demand at the website tvjax.com. Just ahead, City Councilman Tommy Hazzouri in studio and taking your calls on the HRO in the wake of the tragedy in Orlando. 549-2937 to get on the line now. Then right after that, we're going to tell you why activists are gearing up for another round of protests all around the state against the possibility of another Florida bear hunt. Plus, author Michael Wiley on his new thriller, Black Hammock, all about the intrigue on Jacksonville's mysterious Black Hammock Island. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, Jacksonville City Councilman Tommy Hazzouri says he'll try again in September to get a comprehensive human rights ordinance passed in this city. Hazzouri withdrew the HRO measure, as it's called, a few months ago because there were not enough votes on the 19-member council to pass it. It would have provided legal protections to LGBT residents. Now, though, as the world mourns the victims of the mass shooting at the Pulse nightclub 2 hours south in Orlando, Hazzouri says the HRO has fresh urgency here in Jacksonville. At the same time, HRO opponents have been pointing out that Orlando, unlike Jacksonville, has a comprehensive human rights ordinance that did not protect the 49 victims killed by 29-year-old Omar Mateen. We begin the hour now with a closer look at this issue as we welcome former mayor and Jacksonville City Councilman Tommy Hazzouri to Studio 5. Councilman, thanks for being with us.
Thanks again for inviting me here, Melissa.
And the number to connect with the councilman on this issue is 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show. Weigh in on Facebook. Tommy Hazzouri, you're going to try again with the HRO in September. Is this in part due to the horrific tragedy at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando?
No, it's been our plan all along to do it after the mayor's sales tax referendum, and it was either going to be September or sometime during the fall. What's holding it back now is just waiting for the referendum and then trying to meet in the sunshine with all of our members. No matter what we do, we still need 10 votes. And why, you know, bring it up and watch it go down in flames? And it still may very well do that, but it's not going to be because of lack of effort. We're going to really push forward and talk to all the councilmen, see if there's any tweeting we need to do and tweaking in there to see what we can do to fine-tune it, but more importantly, bottom line is we need the same protections for the LGBT community as we have right now for the rest of Jacksonville.
Do you think the outcry from our North Florida LGBT community saying that they still do not feel as if they're a full part of the fabric of this community because of this issue, do you think that will change some minds on the city council?
You know, I hope so, but, you know, it may just reinforce those who've already committed and made their commitment even stronger. I'd like to see those who say that they're for it and who ran on it, for example, this last year in last year's election, to come out and speak out on it. It shouldn't be just me. It shouldn't just be Aaron Bowman, who was a co-sponsor. It shouldn't be just Jim Love, who was a co-sponsor. It is so important. It makes a statement about Jacksonville and who we are. Cities today are continuing to pass an all-inclusive LGBT amendment. We need to do that, and we needed to do it yesterday.
We'll go to your calls in a moment as we speak with Jacksonville City Councilman Tommy Hazzouri on the Jacksonville Human Rights Ordinance and the mass shooting at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando that killed 49 people. The number to join us, 549-2937. You have been at odds before with Mayor Lenny Curry since he was elected and you were elected to the council. What's your response to the criticism the mayor's getting this week? Pastor Ken Adkins put some hate speech about the LGBT community on Twitter during the debate over the HRO, and he tweeted in the wake of the Orlando tragedy that the homosexuals got what they deserved. Your reaction to Lenny Curry's statement saying that he disavows these outrageous and appalling comments. But this man was on one of the panels that was looking at the issue of the human rights ordinance in Jacksonville.
I I believe what the mayor's saying to be true. I think that he truly does not like and is in disgust over what I'm not going to call him Reverend Atkins or Bishop, because he's not much of a Christian to me, and he's not much of a preacher. A month before I was elected in June of last year, he was speaking on behalf of the LGBT amendment before I got in office. And then afterwards, all of a sudden, it's like, have gun, will travel. He changed his mind. But, you know, he's a hate monger. There's no question about it. He's put Dr. Vitti on his Facebook. He's put me on. He's put black ministers on there, having us in women's bathroom. It's, you know, I'm on the verge of suing him. I was before we left for defamation, not because of me personally, but it's a reflection on this community. It's a reflection on our council. And he needs to stop doing that. If he's against it, that's one thing. Why the mayor, you know, we told the mayor, I asked the mayor, I said, why would you put somebody on there who you know is blatantly against it and is speaking out against it in a very vicious way? And again, his response is what it was in the paper, that, you know, a group of anti-LGBT persons told him that he would be a good asset to it. Well, in hindsight, I'm sure for the mayor, he has his regrets. I had my regrets when I first saw him. I said, that's it for this community meeting, because he represented hate and not really a balanced approach to this whole issue.
What would you say, meanwhile, to those that opposed passage of a fully inclusive HRO in Jacksonville? In recent days, they've pointed out that the city of Orlando does have such a measure. Most major cities in Florida do. And, of course, it did not protect the young people in the Pulse nightclub from this tragedy.
Right. I don't, you know, you don't want to politicize something like this. The guy was a terrorist. We know that. He may have been gay himself. He's been frequenting this is what I've read and understand what he's about. He's been frequenting the Pulse Lounge and apparently earmarking that area for whatever he was going to do, which he did in a tragic way, in a horrible way, in a horrific way. But, you know, it's not – the fact remains, you can't escape the fact that it was a gay bar, and most of them Latinos, and they were attacked. Now, he could have attacked any other place, and we'd be feeling just as horrible about what happened. There's no question, no matter where it was, in Orlando, throughout the United States, this happened to be a gay bar, and you can't ignore that. But I don't think having an LGBT amendment to cover the gay and lesbian community has anything to do with protecting anyone from getting shot at any time. Plenty of people all over the country have been mass murders, and gay and not gay. This seemed to be focused on the gay community. But I don't think that having that law in place made a dime's worth of difference about it. It's not what that law is about. The law is about housing, it's about public accommodations, and it's about employment. And that's all we're trying to do. As far as what this, I don't want to call him a gentleman, this killer did, he did on his own volition, for whatever reason, whether it's because of his religious beliefs or whether he didn't like gays, whatever it was, he did it, and it was horrible. And their pain is our pain, and no matter whether they're gay or not, but this happened to be, and we can't lose focus of the fact that it was a gay bar, and it was a gay lounge, rather, and a club. And it could have been any kind of a club. Any ethnic group could have had an organization, or it could have been just a generic group of people. But he singled out these individuals, and you can't erase that. It was an attack on the gay community.
And as the world mourns the 49 victims in Orlando, the worst mass shooting in the nation's history, what are your questions and thoughts about that? As Councilman Tommy Hazuri says he'll press again to pass the human rights ordinance in Jacksonville, 549-2937. Ira on the south side. Hi, Ira.
Thank you for taking my call, and thanks to the councilman for his leadership.
Thank you.
I'm a U.S. Army Airborne retired after a 30-year active duty career. Would the councilman consider including the Atlantic Beach HRO language that was progressively sponsored and passed by former Mayor Woods and Councilwoman Marks to include veterans in the non-discrimination aspect of the HRO for Jacksonville? And in that sense, would broaden the diversity of the argument and perhaps get some of the Northeast Florida military leadership involved promoting and supporting the HRO.
Okay, thanks, Ira.
It's a good question. You know, veterans, you know, should be included in the present law. This is a group of people we're talking about, the LGBT community, have been singled out and have been discriminated against for years and years and years and years. The veterans I know have the difficulties, and if it took an addition of putting another amendment or including the veterans, we could very well do that. I don't know that it would do much different than what the law presently says, because it's supposed to be for everybody today. Sexual orientation, that's the problem. The difference in this, in our bill versus what is in law today here, the anti-discrimination, if you want to call that, for the rest of Jacksonville, really doesn't, you know, I think once we get a better definition of sexual orientation, and I think that's going to happen nationally, it's going to take it's a national debate today, as you know, and it's going to take probably an act of Congress to make it uniformly acceptable in every state and in every city. You just can't go from one, and I know I'm getting off course of what you've asked about, and I certainly will consider the veterans. I mean, and see if that's something that makes sense for this particular bill. But I think, again, we need to know that when we leave Jacksonville, Florida, and we go to Georgia or Alabama or wherever, that you've got the same laws in place throughout the United States. And unless you do that, the same way with guns. People argue about gun control. When I was in the legislature, each city had a different set of rules and laws for carrying guns and doing things. They have to have it uniformly done everywhere so that the law applies to everyone equally, no matter what the law says.
Let's go to Richard in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Richard. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. Councilman Missouri, thanks for your leadership in this. And I know that there are people who've been opposed to this. Just real quick, right off the bat, I'll address the Ken Atkins issue. Ken Atkins is not from this community. He has been a toy of the politicians for the longest, and Mayor Corey just happened to get caught up in what so many
exactly.
people already know.
Exactly, I agree.
But here's what I'm tired of. Minority communities, whether they're the LGBT community or the Black community or women or whatever the minority happens to be, become this political football by those who are in power, primarily rich white men who run office. And we see it in the fact that Rick Scott refused to even say the word gay or LGBT. He's yet to say it publicly, mainly because he's going to run the party line as far as it can run. But there were four military men that were killed right after the North Carolina shootings, in fact. And where we wrestled over whether or not to call it terrorism, within days, Rick Scott had passed legislation to arm every National Guardsman to be able to carry their own personal weapon because that suited his political party line. So when we say, well, we can't pass an HRO because they had laws, they had the HRO, and it didn't stop this shooting, so passing it here won't stop it, so let's not pass it, that's a political excuse. I may not be the only one, but it shouldn't be
Thanks
done.
For
it
the,
shouldn't be so political.
Thanks for the call. And here is a related comment on our Facebook page from John. Do Ken Atkins' recent comments give you leverage against the mayor's past claims that we don't need an HRO?
It reinforces while it looks like that, you know, he is the enemy of the LGBT today, his attitude is, just reinforces why it's necessary and why it's just another addition, another notch for us to say, look at this gentleman or look at this person. He's a preacher. He's preaching for hatred. He's preaching for ostracizing parts of our society. That's another example. But, you know, it really comes down to the hearts and the minds of the individual. Is this a nation not just under God and not just indivisible, but is it for justice for everyone?
And speaking of which, we'll go to one more call in a moment, but here's a tweet for you. Councilman Hazuri, what was the outcome of the general counsel review on the HR legislation after you submitted it to them?
The outcome, they neither took a position, obviously. It was very positive from a standpoint of the history of sexual orientation and laws on the federal and state level. They took no position, but it wasn't anything that said that they were against it or for it, and that's generally what the general counsel's office or any lawyer would perhaps tell you, unless it was a blatant issue on one side or the other, a blatant decision on one side or the other. We're working with the general counsel's office. Everything that we do when we draft legislation, we take to the general counsel. I have discussions with Jason Gabriel, who's our general counsel, to talk about what can or can't be in this bill. And it has really been fine-tuned. It's similar to what they had before I got on the council 4 years ago when Warren Jones sponsored it. He likes to tell me that he had no co-sponsors, and he was the only sponsor. And
all right. I'm sorry to cut you off. Just want to get in one more call. It's Saleka in Ponte Vedra. Saleka, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that when Trump says that we should ban Muslim immigrants till we figure it out, how about banning assault rifles till we figure it out? I mean, that it seems to be one step in the right direction. And when he says that Obama won't say the words radical Islam, you know, what about with gun control? Why can't people say the words that regular people should not have assault rifles in their hands? It's not meant for regular people. There is no purpose for it.
Okay.
I have an assault rifle. Well,
thank you for the call.
That's an issue for another day, and I have my...
Yeah, in fact, we just discussed that on this show the other day, and we will again.
And I have a lot of opinions about that. But keeping in mind that, you know, the LGBT community is not the enemy. We need to make sure that people understand that. They just want to be part of our society, and they're tired of hiding. They want to be equally treated like everyone else, and no one can ask for anything less than that. The guns are another issue. I have my opinion. It's dividing the country, but we need to address that at another time.
All right. City Councilman Tommy Hazzouri joining us. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much, Melissa. Thank you, audience, for listening.
And here is another big story we're following this morning. Protests are set for the 18th of this month at locations all around the state, including here in Jacksonville, against the possibility of another bear hunt in Florida. This is the state's Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission looks at several options for the hunt. With more on that, we welcome activist Adam Sigalski, executive director of OneProtest.org. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Also in studio, Dr. Peter Catt, an internationally acknowledged expert on lions and lion conservation issues. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Adam Sigalski, you spoke out against the bear hunt last time around. Just over 300 bears were killed. The Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission will be meeting June 22nd and considering several options for the bear hunt, looking at input from all the stakeholders, as they say. Are these protests on the 18th intended to influence their decision?
We just want to make aware that, you know, this will be the biggest protest in the history, I think, of the United States against bear trophy hunting. We have 28 cities protesting all at the same time to raise awareness. The vast majority of Floridians are completely against this hunt. I mean, the mere fact the FWC uses terms like science and conservation, but they sold 3,778 hunting permits to kill 320 bears. That's 10 hunters to one bear, and that is not science-based management at all.
Dr. Catt, you're known worldwide as an expert on lion conservation issues and speaking out against trophy hunting of lions. You've come here to Florida specifically to lend your voice to this debate.
Yes, exactly, because what we're seeing all over the world is a lot of similarities to what's going on here in Florida. For example, you know, as Adam was saying, there's a lack of science-based information to control and to make sure that these hunts are properly conducted. And it's the same for lions, it's the same for leopards, it's the same for elephants, and now we have a situation here for bears that's very, very reminiscent of what's going on in Africa.
And Adam, as the FWC looks at postponing the hunt or not have the one option they're looking at is no bear hunting in Florida.
Yes.
Out of their four options. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's the one you are advocating for.
Yes, because one thing we want to make sure is people don't realize we don't have one bear population in Florida. We have four fractured populations because of development. And we think that some of these populations are so fragile, hunting needs to be taken off the table completely. So that's just one of them. And one thing I want to point out is the Florida Wildlife Federation, one of the biggest pro-hunting groups in the state of Florida, they came out against the hunt last week. A pro-hunting group is even against this, saying that we need bear sanctuaries, bear corridors, so bear populations can travel between each other, because you're getting these genetic isolated pockets of bears in the southwest of Florida.
Dr. Katt, what would you say to supporters of the hunt who see it as a legitimate way to make sure that bears don't come into populated areas? That's been an issue in the state in recent years.
Let me answer that a little bit indirectly. In England, what we have right now is a problem with badgers supposedly causing tuberculosis among cattle. And the way that they're trying to control them there is by shooting and trapping and things like that. And what we're seeing in those kind of populations that are extremely harassed by trappers and by hunters is that they leave the area where they were and they start traveling. So you have this dispersion effect. And what's happening with the bears could well be very, very similar. You know, if you start heavily persecuting them in a particular area, they'll disperse and they'll go to places where they've never been before and where they're not comfortable.
I'd like to follow up a point with, there's two reasons the bears are on the move. One is the U.S. Forest Service is doing a lot of, they're doing bulldozing of our forest. The bears are being pushed out, and the FWC is not working in conjunction with the Forest Service. So these bears have nowhere to go. And they move in, you know, the bears are being cleared out from the forest, and an easy meal is somebody's trash can. And so a lot of times, you know, we're causing these problems, but the people living in these areas are not being responsible. And we're actually working with an engineering firm in Orlando, a German engineering firm, to come up with a very inexpensive bear-proof lock anybody can put in their trash can. Because once a bear realizes it can't get the trash can open, it doesn't come back. These are highly intelligent animals.
Hmm. With all of that said, this is an historic 28-city protest all across the state this Saturday. Tell us about that.
Our group has supplied most of these groups with posters and literature, so we have a unified message, and we just think it's very important for our voice to be heard, because a lot of times we don't have the political power, but we do have the people power. And this is, we have history on our side for this hunt. If we don't stop this now, we might not have a bear population to enjoy for future generations.
Dr. Katt, will you be speaking out further? As I said, you're known around the world for your expertise on lions.
Well, I think what we need to do is we need to address these issues in a unified way. We cannot any longer afford to just look at lions or just look at leopards or just look at elephants or just look at bears, because the problems all over the world are pretty similar. You know, we have the same situations happening. For example, in Kenya, we have lions being driven out of their ancestral habitats by exploding populations, human populations, and people building housing estates all over the place. So once we start figuring out that we have similar problems all over the world, then we can come up with similar solutions. And I think that joining together is the best way to do it. And as Adam was saying, you know, if you join together, you have a lot more political clout than you do if you work alone.
This Saturday, 11 a.m., Riverside Park is the site of the local protest, correct?
Yes. Yeah, we'll be meeting at the park as well, and they'll be doing a march to the Riverside's Art Market, handing out literature, talking to people. And we know that some news is coming out, the Times Union's coming out to and do some interviews. And we just think it's a great way to get to the people and let them know what's going on, because a lot of people don't know that this is happening.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you very much.
Adam Sigalski is executive director of One Protest. Dr. Peter Katt is here in Florida from England. He's an internationally acknowledged expert on lions and lion conservation issues. And much more still ahead later, Go Skate Jacks is taking over downtown this weekend. But right after the break, author Michael Wiley on his new thriller, Black Hammock. Back in a moment.
Legal and political segments on First Coast Connect, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, I'm Al Letson of Reveal.
Always sworn to secrecy.
What happens if they have evidence?
Can I record on the tour?
Can't do that.
I just had a few follow-up questions for you since we last spoke.
We peel back layers of real-life mysteries over the airwaves every single week on Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Chasing the Dream, Poverty and Opportunity in America is a multi-platform public media initiative that provides a deeper understanding of the impact of poverty on American society. Tune in to the PBS NewsHour weeknights at 7 on WJCT-TV for compelling stories of individuals and organizations addressing such issues. And log on to chasingthedreamproject.org. Funding for this initiative is provided by the JPB Foundation and Ford Foundation. Local funding provided by Wells Fargo.
Hello, this is Todd Smith, your Deputy Director for the City of Jacksonville's Emergency Preparedness Division. Disasters can strike with little to no notice. Create your disaster kit now, including water, non-perishable foods, batteries, flashlight, weather radio, and important documents. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
Stock buybacks. Sounds simple, sounds easy and profitable. Not always.
Sure, it would have been much better for us and frankly our shareholders had we not returned the money via a share repurchase.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, our series, The Price of Profits, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, the next book in the Daniel Turner thriller series, Black Hammock, is out today. And this story is set almost entirely on our own Black Hammock Island, long a place of mystery and intrigue here in Jacksonville. What makes Black Hammock Island so fascinating, and what's this story about? Well, author Michael Wiley joins us now with more. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to see you. And this is a thriller, a murder mystery, and it includes your JSO detective, Daniel Turner. He's back again. But you decided to set it on Black Hammock Island, a barrier island up along Heckscher Drive. Why Black Hammock Island?
My thrillers are almost always very urban thrillers, urban crime stories. And I decided I wanted to set something in a kind of a space very inaccessible, the kind of place that if you were caught on, there'd be no escape. It's that kind of story. So if you think, say, Stephen King's The Shining or something like that, where you're caught in a space and under attack, there's nothing you can do to escape. That's the kind of place that Black Hammock is. It's a wonderful place.
And here's a quick call out to all of our listeners. Do you have any stories about Black Hammock Island or any questions about this island? There's only one two-lane road in and one coming out. It's sort of known as the place where people go to disappear. Call us up at 549-2937. And Black Hammock tells the story of an 8-year-old named Oren Jacobson who does disappear. Right?
He disappears. It's a story about a very, very dysfunctional family. And he disappears at 8 years old. He is thought to be dead by his own family. And years later, he returns to make things right. And that's the story. And so in a lot of ways, he's the one who comes into this inescapable place, this place from which you can't escape violence.
Did you spend some time on the island when you were getting ready to write the book?
I did. I have a good friend out there. I won't name his name.
People on that island don't want to be known. They want to be on the down low. You know, don't they?
Yeah, it's a place, you know, the former moonshining kind of place. It's a kind of place that people go to disappear. There are no stores, no churches, no kind of infrastructure at all. You don't get, say, sewers or the other kind of normal plumbing. You do have electricity, but that's about it.
There's nothing but swamp and woods and houses hidden in the woods,
and
pretty
beach.
Much.
And, yeah, or not beach, but, yeah, you're surrounded by swamp. It's a barrier island.
Yeah. Is it spooky? Do you feel spooked out when you go there?
It's a funny place. You know, it's got a lot of agriculture. So, you know, if you want to hear the cows mooing, you can still go there.
And there are folks that have a lot of land, don't they?
Sure. Until I think the early 1970s, there were maybe half a dozen families out there. I think that now there's closer to about 300, but it's still a place of wide open spaces and, you know, a lot of mobile homes and things like that. So, some you know, some bigger houses too, but mostly it's pretty undeveloped.
You did an appearance at a book club I'm part of to talk about your previous book, and you told all of us that your new one was going to be called Black Hammock, and a woman in the book group said, "Oh, whenever my husband and I go boating, he cuts the motor when we go by Black Hammock Island." And I said, "Why are you cutting the motor?" And her husband said, "Well, they might be shooting today." So at that point, that's when I became aware of this legend around Black Hammock Island. And how smart of you to capitalize on that with this book.
It has a reputation of lawlessness. Now, I'm not sure how lawless it really is, but it is the kind of place that, you know, I just love the name too, Black Hammock.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like the kind of place that you'd want to avoid.
You're known for writing these potboilers where you just can't wait to find out how it all ends. That's how I feel when I read your books, this sort of noir fiction. And you used to write books around a Chicago police detective, but now you've got it set firmly here in Jacksonville. Daniel Turner is the through line through all of your books, but he's not always the main character.
No, he's always secondary. He always comes in and makes an arrest. In this one, he's somebody who years ago, when the main character, Oren, was an 8-year-old, he came out and he was aware of something going on. And so he was investigating at that time. And now there are reports coming in from this isolated island that something else is going on. And so he's making a return. And so he comes out. He makes the arrest, but mostly it's a story about the people, the family who lives there.
Yeah. And so what's your process when you come up with a new plot? Because you're setting all of them here now in Jacksonville and creating a whole genre here in Jacksonville.
Well, Jacksonville is such an amazing place, really. You know, I think that it has escaped all kind of a literary, popular or more serious kind of literary attention for so many years. And it's a kind of place that there are places like Black Hammock, there's, you know, the downtown, there's the beaches. You know, it's such a rich environment for storytelling. And so what I do is I try to find, you know, I'm a very place-centered writer. And so I really want to evoke a sense of the places I write about. And Black Hammock is an ideal one. So I spend time in the places. I try to meet the people who are living in these places and incorporate as much of that as I can.
Do you want to read a quick excerpt from the book?
Sure.
Okay.
This is a chapter that begins, Lexi is one of the two narrators who tells this story. And this is when she sees a man who turns out to be her brother coming in. The man came over the hill in the afternoon, vaulted over the gate, came over the hill into the yard. Black clouds stacked in the west. The sky held its breath, breathed out. The wind whipped over the hill, sweeping dust and sand off the dry ground. Rain pocked the ground. The sand and dirt turned into fish scales and then into a brown wash. Lightning jagged the sky. The yard smelled like salt, like a first world. If I closed my eyes, I could believe it. The man came over the hill and up the driveway, kicking wet sand and dust. These things are hard to get a grip on. But I know this much. Nothing on this island stops for rain.
And that's an excerpt from Michael Wiley's newest. It's called Black Hammock. You're going to be doing a book signing tonight.
I am. I'm going to be at Chamblin's Uptown on Laura Street. That's the one right near the new library. No longer new, but the big library. And that will start at 6:30.
Okay, so it's your chance to come out and meet author and UNF professor Michael Wiley. His latest Daniel Turner crime thriller is out, and it's called Black Hammock. Go on out and meet him and get your book signed tonight at Chamblin's Uptown, 6:30 p.m. Congrats on the new success, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Melissa.
And we'll be right back.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, a website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's Modern Guide for Adulthood, Part 2. Sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
On the next Fresh Air, Salon Editor-in-Chief David Daley says Republican strategists realized years ago that to control Congress, they needed to control congressional redistricting, which mostly occurs in state houses. So Daley says Republicans targeted key state legislative races in the 2010 election to powerful effect. He tells the story in a new book. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Join WJCT and Baptist Health for Girls' Day Out, Saturday, September 17th, Hyatt Hotel. The day will include great national and local speakers that will inspire and empower you to live your life to the fullest. Tickets are $40. Do not miss out. Log on to wjct.org/girlsdayout.
Newtown was the mass shooting that was supposed to bring change to national gun laws.
People constantly say, oh, nothing's ever changed. We're at a complete stalemate on guns. And if you only look at Congress, that's right.
But there has been a wave of legislation at the state level, including restrictive new laws. An update on gun laws across the U.S. later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
You might have the wisdom of the ages, the power of the ancients, the Ark of the Covenant, but when stuff really hits the fan, even you might need a little help. On the next Snap Judgment, Godsend. Snap Judgment, storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, the Swamp Challenge is coming up in Gainesville. This is a fun fitness event that should draw Gator fans from miles around. Spokeswoman Stephanie McCarthy is on the line now from the Swamp. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And, of course, a lot of people in Gainesville know about the Swamp Challenge, but it's your goal to reach Gator fans and fitness enthusiasts from far and wide, including here in Jacksonville, right?
Yes, it's one of the first times people other than the football players get to actually be on the field and competing in an event.
What's going to be happening? This is at Ben Hill Griffin Stadium, June 18th and 19th. Tell us all about it.
So we have a two-day fitness event for all different fitness levels. We have kids as young as 8 years old competing up to people in their 60s. We have three different things going on. We have a kids adventure race and an adult adventure race. The adventure race is about 2 miles long, and then it ends with this grand finale on Florida Field with a bunch of obstacles the whole 100 yards. Then we also have a CrossFit style fitness competition that's a 2-day competition with 5 different workouts over 2 days.
Oh, what kind of workouts?
Anything. The first one's going to be the adventure race with everybody else, and then we'll be doing things like lifting barbells. They have everything's in a team format. So it's all teams of two kind of working their way through various movements.
Now, this is your 7th year hosting the Swamp Challenge, but it's the first time you're hosting it in the stadium, right? In the Swamp?
Yes. We started a long time ago out front of the Swamp, just on the front field. And then over the last 7 years, we've moved to various locations, but it's always been our goal to get into the actual Swamp, and this is the year.
All right. And you have been reaching out within a 6-hour radius of Gainesville to draw Gator clubs, Gator fans. Do you even actually have Georgia fitness enthusiasts coming to this as well?
Yeah, we're really excited.
How were you able to convince them?
Well, we're partnered with the University Athletic Association, so they've been helping us reach the alumni far and wide, and I'm pretty sure they're just pocket Gator fans everywhere just waiting to get their chance to be on the field.
All right. Well, it is the 7th annual Swamp Challenge in the Swamp, June 18th and 19th in Gainesville. Go to swampchallenge.com for more information. Stephanie McCarthy on the line from Gainesville. Thanks for sharing this with us.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll be right back.
The other night when I was putting him to bed, I was telling him how much I loved him. And I said to him, you know, buddy, someday you are going to be a great father. And he kind of mumbled and said, you know what, Dad, one day you're going to be a great father too.
Join us next time for stories of fathers and children. The adventures, the joys, the predicaments. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross.
Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
True story, June 2001. A 10-year-old girl named Laura Buxton.
Hello, I'm Laura Buxton.
Let's go of a balloon.
Phew.
That balloon floats 140 miles and lands Conk. In the yard of an entirely different girl named Laura Buxton.
They're both Laura Buxton?
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
Maybe we were meant to meet.
Is our world full of magic and meaning?
Strange things do happen by chance.
Or is it just chance? That's next time on Radiolab.
Saturdays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, here is another option for your weekend, the second annual Go Skate Jax Festival. 3 days of fun is planned, including skating, food trucks, public art, and there's also a side dish of controversy around this. City Councilman Bill Gulliford has proposed a bill that would ban skating downtown. So how's this all going to work? Well, James Smith and Mike Peterson of the Black Skate Supply and Go Skate Jax Festival are here now with more. Hey, guys, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
How are you doing?
This is the second annual event. Tell us all the details, James. Where, when, what's all on the agenda?
All the details can be found at GoSkateJax.com. But essentially, Friday night, we're doing a tapping party at Intuition Ale Works, and our friends at Brew 5 Points are sponsoring that. Saturday night, we're going to have a big block party at the Block Skate Supply, and our friends at Hawthorne are sponsoring that. And then Sunday, we're going to be under the Fuller Warren Bridge at the Riverside Arts Market, thanks to our good friends at Tempool Incorporated.
And you want to invite skaters to come out, Mike, and be part of this, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's going to be really cool. We did it last year and had an amazing turnout, and we're hoping for the same this year.
You're holding this second annual event in the shadow of a bill that's been proposed by Councilman Bill Gulliford that would ban skating anywhere in the downtown area. What about that?
Well, we on our the Block Skate Supply, we have an open letter to Councilman Gulliford. We'd love for him to come by and be able to meet some skaters, meet his constituents, and actually talk to folks about how skating can be used not only as a mode of transportation, but skating can be used to be able to really ignite kids' imagination, create innovation. I mean, there's so many great things that are tied to skating. There's so much creativity tied into skating that we're confident that if he hung out with some of these folks, that he would understand that skating is not a crime.
What about his concern that there are safety issues with people skateboarding, skating in the urban core, Mike?
I don't think there's really any safety issues. I think that, you know, it's kind of hard because you see somebody skating down the road and it might make you like, oh my God, like step out of the way or something just because we, you know, we're riding down the road. But it's just like if a bike was riding down the road or anything like that, you're not going to jump out of the way for that, you know? Uh-huh. I think it's just kind of the way it's portrayed is like what, you know, they see or they think the damage that we do that we're going to, you know, hurt people around us. But it's not like that at all, you know?
Are you going to have a half pipe under the bridge, or what?
We'll have a half pipe. We'll have a street course. The Jaguars are bringing their Prowler RV out. We've got food trucks, and then of course the wonderful brew that we look forward to tasting that Intuition has made for us. That'll be out there and icy cold as well.
It's interesting too, because not everyone realizes that the oldest skate park in the country is in Jacksonville.
Yeah, Jacksonville has
the Kona Skate Park.
Kona Skate Park. And Jacksonville has an amazingly rich skate community, and there's some great folks here. I think people also don't realize how familial skateboarding is, and how, you know, it passes on to generation, how inclusive it is. I mean, you see people from all ethnic backgrounds, from all social economic backgrounds, that all get to enjoy skating. I mean, it's an open playing field.
What do you like about it?
For me personally, watching what it did for my kids. I didn't grow up a skateboarder. My first skateboard was, I think I bought it 3 or 4 years ago. But seeing how it has helped my kids, how it's caused them to really fall in love with something, how it's caused them to not be afraid of taking risks, how it's caused them to focus on mastery rather than just like getting by. All those things I've watched my kids benefit from through skateboarding, and it has brought me, you know, to want to get involved in skateboarding.
Because you're also affiliated, we need to point out, with the Miros Academy.
Exactly. And, you know, skateboarding has always played a big role in how we view kids needing to be educated, where there's flow and where there's this kind of excitement about learning. And that definitely is captured in skateboarding.
You think that it helps them with their studies?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, I mean, there are organizations like Skatistan that have showed amazing progress with education by getting kids excited about skateboarding and then tying their lessons in whatever it is, physics, language arts, history, mathematics, all of those things can be tied directly to skating.
So you have an open letter on your website, your Go Skate Jacks website, to the councilman. Are you going to encourage him to come and attend this festival?
Yeah, we invited him, and we haven't got a response yet, but we're hoping he'll show up.
Yeah, yeah. You think he might?
I don't know.
Are you going to get are you going to get Bill Gulliford on a skateboard?
I don't know about that, but that might be interesting to see.
you could make the ask.
It would be pretty cool if he did show up. I think that, you know, like I said, I don't think he has any idea what we do or what we're doing. So I think, you know, if he showed up, it might change his view a little bit on this whole thing, you know.
Well, we'll put the request out to him as well. I don't think we can get him on such short notice. But in the meantime, as you said, all the information is on the website.
Correct.
Which is?
GoSkateJacks.com. And the open letter to Councilman Gulliford is on the BlockSkateSupply.com.
It's the second annual Go Skate Jacks Festival, and it's coming up this weekend. I think it's cooling off Saturday a little, by the way.
So it'll be cool under the bridge.
It'll be cool under the bridge. Friday is the tapping party. Is that at Intuition
Ale? At Intuition Ale Works.
A new brew just for this festival.
Correct. They're making a boneless smash IPA.
Wow. Saturday is the block party, and that is going to be under the bridge.
No, that's at the Block Skate Supply.
Oh, sorry, at Block Skate Supply. Sunday is Go Skate Day under the Fuller Warren Bridge.
Go Skate Jacks Day under the Fuller Warren. That's correct.
Okay. Again, GoSkateJacks.com for more information. James Smith, Mike Peterson, happy skating. Thanks for being with us. Have a great time.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you.
That's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to the Daily Podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And you can watch the show with video segments at tvjacks.com and metrojacksonville.com. Next on Diane Rhee, many of the victims of the Orlando mass shooting were young, gay, and Latino. The latest on the investigation and the ongoing debate over America's tradition of cultural diversity and the threat of terrorism. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day. We'll be right back.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.